Loading in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It's the cure for the common restaurant. Expert interviews, tools, and tips to get you the restaurant you know it can be. Now, here is your host, Donald Burns, the Restaurant Coach.
And welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It is the cure for the common restaurant. This is episode number 16, and I am honored to have on the show my guest and friend, fellow industry expert, Kelly Jones. Let's jump right into the interview. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another RCU live event sponsored by the Restaurant Coach University, the premier online learning platform for restaurants that want to maximize their potential. Hey, tonight we're going to talk about hospitality. And it seems like a lot of restaurants have lost touch with what hospitality really is and how to nurture that spirit within their culture. And to help me out, I am so honored to have a true restaurant legend on the show. I kind of refer to him as he is the restaurant concept king, Kelly Jones from Kelly Jones Hospitality. Hey, Kelly, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. And remind me to hire you to do my PR.
Yeah, I know, huh? So for for people out there who might not know your backstory and stuff like that, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and where you're located, what you do? And I mean, if you ever go to his website, and the links will be in the episode later, you can check out his website. He has like a list. I tried to write down as many as I could, but there's so many restaurants that you've been involved with. I was just overwhelming. So why don't you tell a little bit about yourself? Okay.
I've been very blessed in my career. I've worked with the best in class prior to launching out and being an entrepreneur about 10 years ago. I worked, at senior positions with China Grill Management back when we were the third largest multi-unit concept operators in the country. I was vice president of restaurant operations and ran the restaurant division for Kimpton Hotels for years, and then joined Stephen Starr and grew him out of Philadelphia into New York, Atlantic City, and Florida. Worked with the Light Group here in Las Vegas as their president before I started out on my own in 2008. And God, I get to do a lot of things. I own and operate my own restaurants. I have a management company that operates third-party owner restaurants, bars, nightclubs, hotel, food and beverage. And I also have a consulting company. And I do a lot of what you do, going and teach people that don't do what we do how hard it is to do what we do.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You're all over the place. And if people ever want to really check out some really cool stuff, I mean, Kelly does a lot of YouTube videos. So, I mean, he has some really great training material on there and some stuff he does like that. And if you're ever in the market for someone to come and speak to your restaurant, your group, or do a keynote speech, Kelly, I've seen his presentations. He is amazing. And I'm trying to get a job with UPR for now.
I've been really, really fortunate. I work with Madison Square Garden, and I've trained over 1,000 team members at Madison Square Garden, Radio City Music Hall, Beacon Theater, Chicago Theater. I opened the LA Forum for them. I work with Westfield and do all the training at the Tom Bradley International Terminal, LAX. So I've basically branched out from, not only being hospitality, restaurants, bars, nightlife, but also corporate training. Because, at the end of the day, hospitality is, by definition, warm, personal, engaging service. And if you deal with the public on any level, you're in hospitality, whether it's that retail, entertainment venues, restaurants, hotels, whatever it might be.
So why do you think a lot of restaurants struggle with hospitality today?
Honestly, I think modern technology and hospitality is an oxymoron. There's nothing warm, personal, and engaging about one of these. Every one of us has one. Every one of us stares into one. And every one of us tends to not pay attention to what's going around us. And I really think that, it's interesting because I'm speaking at the National Restaurant Show in Chicago next month. And, my topic is on millennials. And, they don't understand what it's like to grow up without a cell phone. And let's face it, the iPhone was only launched 10 years ago. So it's only been 10 years that we've been so engrossed into technology like we are today. And I think it really takes away from the human connection, that personal interaction that is so critical to hospitality, because hospitality only exists if people believe that you're on their side. And if you're not paying attention to them, you're not being hospitable.
Exactly. Yeah, the millennials, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing I go in work with millennials is, you know, those soft skills. You know, hard skills are pretty easy, and, you know, and we can teach the mechanics of service and stuff like that, but it's the soft skills of interacting with people. And you see it all the time, and you're exactly right. You go to a restaurant, and you see a table of millennials, and they're all on their phones, and the scary thing is they're texting each other at the table, you know?
It is actually funny. I have a cartoon that's in my presentation where you have three, you know, young adults all in their phone, and the caption is, anybody have any place fun they're going to stare at their phones at this weekend? You know, and it is true, and, you know, we've also, you know, all the older generations certainly have really taken to this phone, because what this becomes is a crutch. And that crutch is when we're in a situation where we're not comfortable or we're not, you know, at ease, we can become really busy, really fast just doing this. And, you know, I think that that is probably one of the biggest reasons that, you know, hospitality doesn't exist. You know, let's face it, with all respect, service in America sucks. Service in America has gotten really bad. And, you know, odds are you go into a convenience store and you walk up to the counter with a cup of coffee, pretty certain that the only interaction you have with the clerk is 250. You know, whatever happened to how are you today? Anything I can help you with? You know, did you find everything all right? Thanks so much for coming in. Have a great day. It's you know, the nuances of service, which is about making people feel good. You know, one of my favorite quotes is Maya Angelou says, I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. Exactly. And that's what when people walk out, they can forgive an overcooked steak. They can't forgive rude or inattentive or even worse, non-existent service.
Oh, I know. I was so a lot of times when I'm out, you know, doing work and working with clients, you know, of course, I do like an observation thing. I'll sit in the dining room, of course, and I'll act like I'm doing some work, but I'm also listening to what's going on. And I was at probably about a year and a half ago, I was at a place and I'm sitting there, and there was an older couple at the table next to me, and the waiter was one of those older kind of crusty gentlemen, right? And the lady, she was kind of looking at the menu. She was confused, and so she asked, you know, what do you recommend? And the guy said, I quote, this is exactly what the waiter said. He goes, I recommend you read the menu and tell me what you want. And then I got up right then and I walked into the office because the owner was in the office and I was sitting out there and I was doing some work. I walked in her office and said, you need to fire that freaking asshole right now. He is killing your business.
Well, and you know what's so interesting is, you know, and I work with a lot of teams and a lot of groups and a lot of settings. And, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the day, you might think you're working for the company that writes your paycheck, but you're not. You're working for the consumer at the end of the day. We're in a consumer-based economy. Mm-hmm. And that means every one of us works for the person buying the product. I don't care if you're at Mattel working in a factory. You're working for the guy that's at Target buying that toy. In our industry, you know, you might be getting a paycheck from the guy that owns your restaurant, but you're really working for that guest that sits in that seat that has a name and a face and feelings and emotions, which is why I'd like to rid our industry of the term customer service, because a customer by definition is a person that buys goods and services. Mm-hmm. A guest is somebody you spend time with in a social interaction. So, you know, if you can change the dynamic away from customer to guest, automatically it's more personal. It's a person with the feelings and emotions, a face and a name. And that's what it's all about. So you're right. You should have told that owner to terminate that.
Yeah, I did. I just got up right then. I just walked in the office and said, you need to drag him in there. And we fired him right then, you know. And at first he actually gave me excuses. Well, you know, he's probably one of my best servers. I don't know. He's not. Not when he treats your guests like that. He's not. I don't care if the guy can sell, you know, steak and lobster all night. But if you treat your guest like that, he is not an asset. You know, he's a liability.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't care. I don't care what your guest check average is. If you treat people like that, you are not welcome in any place I ever coach or work with. So.
Well, and, you know, it goes down to, because, you know, I'll ask groups all the time. And I keep coming back to this thing because, like it or not, this is part of culture. And I ask my audience all the time, it's like, how many of you have the – everybody raises their hand. Everybody, I say, how many of you have ever made decisions on where you shop or dine based on what you read online? And almost all the hands
– everybody does too. I do too.
Then I turn the dynamic to them and I say, great, how many of your guests have one of these? And they all raise their hand. And I said, how many of your guests make decisions based on what they read online? See, exactly. As a business owner, I hate Yelp. But as a business owner, I pay very close attention to Yelp. And I've made some really big operational changes in my properties based on what I've read, because, you know, these are consumers, and where there's, you know, certainly an axe to grind and maybe a disgruntled that can go online and write whatever they want without any editorial, you know, oversight. There's still a lot of information that I read that I make business decisions based on that the guest, you know, says, that because we've all done this, right? We've all been editorial, and a server walks and goes, "How is everything today?" And we go, "It's great." And then we turn to each other and go, "It's horrible." Yeah. So, you know, at least that online platform gives you the ability to, you know, read what people would say that wouldn't tell you on site.
Right. Yeah, I just wrote a big article, a big blog post on Foodable about online, the obsession with online reviews, you know, and how people really, some people go crazy about it. And what I, with my clients, I'm probably like you, you know, I tell them, you know, one bad review in a bunch is nothing to really get upset about. Now, if I start seeing trends, and I look for the thread is what, you know, if I get a consistent name, or I get a consistent kind of topic, like food was cold. Now I got something. Okay, now we got some action. Now we got something we can act on. But just some, you know, 19-year-old kid who thinks he's going to be the next, you know, food critic of New York, and gets on, you know, gets on Yelp and writes us, you know, a terrible review, and you just tell, and you see these kids on there, you know, "Well, you know, the tacos were not to my liking. I like a little more, you know, pepper on my edge of my carne asada taco." And you're like, "Oh, geez, give me a break, man." You know,
there's Tallulah on the table.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you read that thread, as you say, and if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck and swims like a duck, you got a duck, and you better take care of that.
That's a freaking duck you got to deal with, man. So what do you think, you know, and I know millennials, how do restaurant owners really work with millennials to help them kind of break down that, you know, and develop some of those soft skills?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing is don't ever allow them to have their cell phones while they're working. In every one of my properties, it's in your backpack, it's in your locker, it's in your car, it is not on you. Because again, you know, what's the first thing that all of us, including me, do as soon as we get to a point where we have nothing to do and we're bored? We check our emails, our Instagram or whatever. Yeah, you see, you're about there right now. And so that's the first thing, is that, you know, completely take that away from them. That's no option.
It is. And that should be no option.
But the more you expect from your team, the more you have to train them. And I think, you know, culture is the biggest thing, where I work with companies all the time that have bring me in to revise their training programs. And almost 100% of the times, they have 95% of everything they need mechanically, but they have no culture. And the culture is what's really going to make or break an establishment, a company, a restaurant. It's so really true. What is the most common denominator to know that every team member is going to do absolutely what is right to make sure that the guest has a great experience. And so, you know, you've got to train culture, because that is going to be the litmus test of integrity, where people are doing the right thing even when no one's looking.
Oh, that is so true. Yeah, I always tell people all the time that, you know, culture is your calling card to the world. What is your calling card saying? And integrity is huge. And yeah, in fact, I was just dealing with I have a client right now that basically we just had this conversation yesterday about integrity, that, you know, when the owner's there, or when when the chef's there, the team acts a certain way, you know, and then as soon as the chef has a night off, and they're totally different. They don't want to run food, you know, they complain. And I'm like, well, that's culture. That's nothing else, you know, because he was like, "How do I train them?" I said, "Well, it's hard to train that. You know, they know what to do. It's just that's a culture issue, and that we're going to have to work on that." And I'm actually heading down this week to work with them on those items, because if culture is so huge, and people just don't understand it, you know. They think culture is just, yeah.
Go ahead. Go finish the thought.
No, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's funny, because, you know, I just worked with a very big company, which I won't talk about. And, you know, the same thing happened. I had thousands of pages of training material. Mm-hmm. And I sat with the COO, and this company has thousands of employees. And I sat with the COO, and I said, you know, listen, you have everything that you need from a mechanical standpoint. I need to repurpose it, repackage it, and add 5% that's missing. I said, but the problem you have is you have no culture piece. And he said, well, like, give me an example. So I pulled a $100 bill out of my pocket. I put it on the desk, and I said, on one page, in one server's manual, in one location, and this is multiple locations, I said, I saw something on a mission statement for your company. And I said, that $100, I'll bet you can't tell me what your mission statement is. Yeah. And he said, well, why would you say that? I said, because I know you can't do it. And he goes, why do you think I can't? I said, because your mission statement is a paragraph. Your mission statement needs to be a sentence. If your lowest common denominator doesn't know your mission statement or your core values or your company's vision, then it's never going to gain traction and the rubber's never going to hit the road.
Nope. That's the first thing I always work on. We always work on core values. The first thing we dig into anytime I work with somebody is the first thing we dig into is core values. And I always say, and core values have to be lived by the people that run the organization. Because if you don't buy into it, and here's my thing, a lot of people pick what I call, surface values. They'll pick those fancy words that they think everyone should be, we should be this, we should be efficient, we should be, productive, but no one's really living it. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, and the difference is that a verb or an adjective, because there's two different things there. And quite often, I'll work with teams, and you even said it. It's like, I will hire personality any day over.
Oh, yeah.
And, quite often it's like, experience brings a lot of bad habits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it does. And it's hard to break bad habits too, because they've become subconscious and people don't think about them,
Yeah.
So one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show is I saw one of your YouTube videos, and it was a two-parter. I don't know if we'll have time for all of it, but I hope we do. And you had your rules of hospitality.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk about some of your rules of hospitality? Because I think that is, like, again, something that's missing in the United States today, or maybe even in the world. Service and hospitality. I think America, especially restaurants, average has become the standard. And until we break free from this addiction of average and break free from that cult of mediocrity, we're never going to have the restaurants that we should. And I think hospitality is, I think, the first kind of path we need to take. We need to get on to a commitment of hospitality. And not only we have to understand what hospitality is. And so your rules of hospitality, I love the video. And I just wanted you maybe to expound on it a little bit and just kind of talk about some of your basic rules of hospitality.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of them.
However, I know.
It really, really comes down to, I ask, when I do training, I ask, who is more important or what is more important than the guest that's in your place of business while you're working? The only answer, nothing. That's the first one. You got to be guest focused. And it really comes down to what I call moments of truth. And moments of truth are simply this. Anytime a guest comes into contact with any person or product within your place of business, card. Moment of truth. First interaction on the phone. Thank you for calling Proof Tavern. Can you hold please? Click. Well, no, I can't. Click. How about this? Thank you for calling Proof Tavern. Can you hold, please? Yes, I can. Thank you very much. Click. I'm sorry to keep you holding. This is Kelly. How may I help you? That's a very big difference in the moment of truth. Moments of truth. When you get to a property, are you greeted immediately? Moment of truth. Is the food as it's, written on the menu? Moment of truth. Does the server greet you immediately? Even if it's to say, I'll be right with you. See, I can wait a long time if you acknowledge me. When I know you know that I'm there and you ignore me, that tenses me up. Just I'll be right there. And it happens all the time. It happens in banks, at car
rentals,
at airports. It happens in retail. It happens in restaurants. It's like, I know you know that I'm here, but you are going to make me wait for you. And I think most people are somewhat smart and they know and they can tell that you're busy. And I get you're busy, but a simple, I'll be right with you. Make eye contact.
Right.
Rules being the 10-5 rule, 10 feet away, smile, make eye contact, 5 feet away, verbally greet the guest. As a Columbia University study shows that people are 26% more likely to purchase from you if they like you. And I always like to say, who are you more forgiving of? Because it's never about with my team. And I'm pretty sure this expands to the industry as a whole. Mm-hmm. But I tell my team all the time, it's never about if you make a mistake, it's about when you make a mistake. Exactly. But I find people are much more forgiving of friends than they are perfect strangers. So if you can build the rapport and ingratiate yourself to the guest, when you make that mistake, you forget to fire something or order something or spill something, they're going to be much more forgiving of you because they like you. So, right. You know, the biggest thing in the rules for hospitality is nothing's more important than the guest. Greet them immediately and build a rapport with them.
That is the truth. And building rapport is so hard for some people. It just seems like, again, because they don't have those soft skills, those people skills, and they're afraid to talk to people. People aren't going to bite you. You know what I mean? And like you said.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, Donald, and I know we don't have a lot of time, but I have to speak to that very specifically. So for years, I'm talking 15, 20 years, two things that I was always getting dinged on my mystery shopper reports was mm-hmm. the host was not building a rapport on the way to the table right. and the manager was not table touching. Those things consistently mm-hmm. were getting missed on mystery shops. And one day I asked one of my managers, I'm like, that's the fourth time that you didn't touch the table. Why don't you touch tables? And he said to me, and this was an epiphany for me, I don't know what to say to people. So we developed, and by the way, it was the same thing with the host. The host didn't know how to make small talk with people on the right. way to the table. So we actually developed something about 10 years ago that I'm going to share for free to your audience.
All right.
We developed really a script. So one mm-hmm. of the things we said was we want the host, by the time they seat somebody, that they need to find out four pieces of the guest. Number one, when they check in, what their name was. Number two, on the way to the table, whether or not they've ever dined with us before, where they lived, and how they heard of us. And it's very simple. So you and I right. could role play this, and that's what we would do. We would role play with the host. They would be mm-hmm. like, you know, Mr. Jones, thank you so much for dining with us. Have you ever dined with us before? Well, no, I haven't. Oh, do you live here? No, I don't. Where do you live? I live in New York City. Great. How did you hear of us? Well, my concierge at the hotel, you know, told me about it. Or Mr. Jones, have you ever dined with us before? Well, yes, I have. Oh, you live here? Yes, I do. Great. Mm-hmm. You know, how did you hear of us? Oh, you know, my friends and I come in all the time. Well, thank you. They go back and they write on what we call the host chits. Mr. Jones, table 34, seat 1, never dined with us before, lives in New York City, and hands that to the manager. Now the manager is armed with, Mr. Jones, thanks for joining us tonight. I understand you live in New York City. Thanks so much for coming in tonight. Yes. Now all of a sudden, Mr. Jones is sitting there going, oh my God, how did you know my name? How did you know where I live? And we take people totally off guard. Number one, it fixed our issue with our mystery shops. And number two, it completely gave our hospitality spin a whole bigger meaning because now people are interacting and becoming friends with the guest.
That's what it's all about. So, well, we have a comment here from Andrew Carlson. Andrew's he's a consultant out in LA too. He says, you know, face to face interaction. You know, can I just give them a screen order on?
Yeah, absolutely, yes, you can, and that's called fast food.
That is called fast food, exactly. That is not the essence of hospitality, right? You know.
Well, you know, I mean, and by the way, you know, sadly, because our industry is, you know, for a lot of reasons, you know, from a business standpoint, mm-hmm. evolving to less labor. But, you know, it certainly is something that is being done more and more where there's less and less bodies servicing the guest. You right. know, I'm old school. I want service. But, you know, we also teach our servers to really read the guests. You know, there's times where I want to kibitz and talk with the server and get to know them. And there's mm-hmm. times I'm in a business meeting where it's like, I'm begging you to go away and leave us alone. You know, so it's so important that
exactly.
the server, bartender, reads the guest and knows what level of service people want. And by the way, there's still so many incredible servers out there. Unfortunately, they're being eclipsed by the really bad ones.
Yeah. I always say, it's just like, you know, I always say there's always more good in the world, just, you know, and there's always more good people than bad people. It's just the bad people get better press. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's human nature. We do that's focus on negative. And that's why I always go, you know.
Or negativity bias.
Well, I'll ask my team. It's like, when's the last time you went out? You had the most amazing meal. The service was great. The food was great. Everything was incredible. Mm-hmm. The next day, How many people did you tell? And people will go like, oh, we told everybody. I go, really? Okay. Well, now I want you to think about the last time you went out. You had a brutal experience. The service was horrible. The food was inedible. Everything was so bad. You're like waiting for Ashton Kutcher to walk out and go punk. It was that bad. The next day, how many people did you tell? That response is everybody. We tell everybody. So as humans, we will go out of our way to tell people about bad experiences and maybe tell people about the good experiences.
Right. Yeah, that's the truth. It's human nature. We can't ignore it.
No.
No.
But you can manage it.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely manageable, and it's teachable and trainable, you know? And the biggest thing I find is it has to be modeled. It has to be modeled by the leadership. You know, they have to. They have to take the control, and they have to lead it. You can't go out there and just preach, you know, and push them out there in front and go, you know, do this, and then I'm going to be back here, you know, not doing it.
Well, there's an old saying that I absolutely believe in my core being, and that is there's no other way to lead than by example.
Exactly. And that's what leadership is. I talk about this all the time. If you just look at the words, and I'm like you, I'm a big believer in the power of words. You know, do we call them customers or we call them guests? You know, is it, you know, are we doing service or are we doing hospitality? Are we managers or are we leaders? To me, a manager, basically, if you look at the first part of the word manager, just basically manages. They manage the shift. They manage the day-to-day. They manage the fires. I call managers firefighters. They go from problem to problem, just putting out the problems. And the thing is, when a firefighter doesn't have any problems, they sometimes start their own fires to have something to do because that's just the way they are. Where a leader, if you look at the first part of the word leader, they lead. They get out in front, you know. So.
Yeah, well, you and I are very similar because we follow each other in our blogs and you know, our different online stuff. But, you know, I'm Captain Cliche because I believe them in my being. So, you know, there's a saying that managers light a fire under people. Leaders light a fire in people.
There you go.
And that's the difference.
And that might end up in my blog post next. You never know.
That's okay. Please.
Don't worry. I'll quote you. Don't worry, man. I'll quote you. So, hey, if success was a recipe, if you were making a recipe for success and you could only – if you could put three main ingredients in there, what would be those three main ingredients for your recipe for success? You know, either you can do it either globally as like as a restaurant, as you know, what do I need for a recipe for a restaurant, or as a leader, what's my recipe for success, or what's Kelly Jones' recipe for success?
Make mistakes, but learn from them, and don't be afraid to put yourself out there and try something, because you know, success is the result of good judgment. Good judgment is the result of experience, and experience is quite often the secondly, be a student of your craft. You know, there's never that stop in learning anything. And, you know, I probably read 20 different industry publications every month and get good ideas. In fact, my staff, you know, loves that I tear them out and to them and here, you should read this. So be a student of your craft. And lastly, listen, you know, the only thing consistent in the world is change. And Winston Churchill has the best quote. He says, be prepared with a plan, then be prepared to change your plan. And quite often we as people in our industry, you know, we want things a certain way. But you know what? You know, I learned as a chef by trade for many years, you know, just because I love something doesn't mean it's going to sell. And if it doesn't sell, it's not that good. And, you know, at the end of the day, you can have the best service, the best food, the best atmosphere. But if you're not making money, it's not that good.
That's exactly right. Least we forget, we are in the business to make a profit. And I always tell people, profit is not a dirty word.
No, it's not.
No.
And, you know, you can have a lot of fun. And listen, you don't get into this business for the wonderful hours and the great benefits and pay. But you know what? There's a lot of great things. And, you know, first thing, you got to like people. If you don't like people, there's a cubicle with a fluorescent light and a computer screen for you. Exactly. That's your job. You got to like people. You got to be able to put yourself out there. And, you know, again, you know, be open and receptive to other people's opinions. You know, it doesn't mean you have to take the advice or follow it. But you know what? I'm always gracious that somebody thinks enough about me to let me know their thoughts and feelings.
Exactly right. Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You're right. If you don't like people, there's other professions that you should
get. Career change.
Yeah. Career change. Yeah. I think one time I think it was like, do you have a tip for me? Yeah, you should think about getting out of the restaurant business. That's my tip.
You know? Yeah, no, I've had that conversation with quite a few people.
Do you have a tip for me? Yeah. You got good news and bad news.
Good news, we found out what you're not good at.
Yeah, good news is there is a job out there for you. Bad news is it's just not here. Yeah. So, you know, you've got quite a few things that just happened. You just said, I mean, earlier before we went live, you said you just opened a new place, right?
Yeah, we opened a gaming tavern out in Lake Las Vegas where I'm based, called Proof Tavern. You know, it's a upscale tavern food, but we have 15 bar top gaming. Opening up a mini donut concept at MGM Grand here in Las Vegas. We're doing a hotel, the Mayfair Hotel out in downtown LA that'll open up in July with 5 different food and beverage outlets, including a 10,000 square foot pool deck, restaurant, speakeasy, lobby lounge, and library bar. We also are doing a bunch of stuff back in New York City. I have an office in New York City, so my East Coast team is doing some fun stuff back there. We're doing a food hall in Fort Worth, Texas, a food hall in New Jersey. So, you know, it's keeping us busy. We're having a great time.
I love food halls. I think food halls are the trend, the hot trend for 2017 and beyond. They are, I mean, I love them. I have a client who has a food hall in Houston. And, I mean, it is jamming all the time. It is a killer concept. I think food halls are awesome.
Well, you know, for two reasons. For the consumer, it's great because you have 10 people going out to dinner. They can have 10 different experiences and bring it all back to the community table. From an operator, especially an expanding operator, you have the ability to expand your brand without, taking on a lot of risk because, your highest costs are your labor and your occupancy. So, you know, you can expand, if you do a great burger, you can just do a burger concept with 2 employees and be able to, have a lower rent because you're only in 500 or 1,000 square feet. So being able to go out and, pick some of the best in all the regional industries, the best pizza guy, the best ice cream guy, the best baker, the best burger, the best ramen noodle guy, and bring them into a food hall to create a great experience for the developer, but also a great experience for the consumer as well.
Did you this last winter, you opened up a couple ramen concepts, right?
Yeah, I have a ramen noodle shop in Burlington, Vermont called Gaku Ramen, which loosely translates to educated noodle. And two other spots in college towns across the Northeast as well.
Oh, very cool. Oh, we got a question here from Robert. He asks, what are the top 3 things you do to build customer loyalty and also brand awareness?
Social media.
Exactly. Social media is
even though I brought it up as all 3, but social media is key. Listen, I'm an old school guy. I don't tweet, but I have somebody that tweets for my company and every one of my properties every day. They do Pinterest, they do Instagram, they do Facebook. And what's really important about social media, which again, as a student of my craft, I'm learning, every one of those platforms is a different audience. So you have to tailor your message differently for every platform. So social media is key. What was the question again?
Top 3 things to build your to build customer loyalty and also to brand awareness?
Customer loyalty, give them a great experience. And when I consult and I walk into a turnaround situation on a property, probably the number one thing that I do across the board is stop all advertising and marketing and fix the operation because you're spending all this money to bring people in and pissing them off.
Yeah.
Stop all that. Let's fix the operation, make sure that your service and your product quality is there, and then we can go back out and try to bring people in. So, make sure your operation is solid because, that's the compound marketing aspect where, people that love your brand will come in and they'll bring other people. So it's kind of like that shampoo commercial and they told 2 friends and they told 2 friends and so on and so on and so on.
Exactly.
It's so true in our business. You've got to make sure that your product is great and that compound marketing will take care of itself. And then the last thing probably would be, I'm a big PR person. I'm not a big advertiser. So, I'll bring PR, especially for openings in, to really tell all the different stories to the various publications, both social publications, industry publications, you know, social media. They can put all the stories out, blogs, what have you. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, it's a lot easier and a lot cheaper to get your word out these days than it was 20 years ago.
That's true. Yeah. In fact, one of my brands I have is Restaurant Social Plus, and we do social media marketing just for restaurants. That's the only thing, only industry we work with. And it's really shocking how many restaurants don't take advantage of social media in the platform. It is probably, I think it's very impactful, and also it's very economical compared to, you know, old traditional print media or billboards. Do people still do billboards? Do you do billboards?
No, I do for nightlife venues, nightclubs.
Nightlife, totally different. Lounge. Yeah.
But not restaurants. I just don't, you know, there's hardly any way to track the return on investment unless you do some kind of a bounce back or couponing. Right. And in my opinion, it cheapens your brand.
Yes. I hate doing that kind of stuff. Oh, here's another question from Julie. Any tips on attracting great team members?
Have your team members be your number one source of recruiting because they've worked with other people. Mm-hmm. Also, listen, you know, it's more and more challenging to attract great people because of, you know, laws and minimum wages and all that kind of thing. So, you know, I do some recruiting on my end.
Right.
But I typically will only advance people that I've worked with that I can personally vouch for. Because anybody can write a flowery resume and give a great interview. But when it comes time for the rubber to hit the road and get in there and actually do what you say you've done in 20 other locations, and they can't do it. And, you know, the other thing is I will tell you probably the number one thing that people don't do, which is an ultimate sin in our industry, they don't check references. Oh, and by the way, I'm not talking about calling people because, you know, Donald, you and I both know when we first met a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. there's 6 degrees of separation in the world. There's a half a degree of separation in hospitality.
Oh.
And if anybody's been in hospitality for more than a few years, mm-hmm. invariably in a 10-minute conversation, we're going to know a couple of the same people. I'm checking those people. I'm calling them up, you know, and it's so funny because the look I get when, you know, I'm interviewing somebody, I'll read the resume. It's like, huh, what's David going to tell me about you when I call him? You know, the look of, oh, David's going to love me. Or, how do you know David? You know?
It's like, oh, I know. I had references. It was probably like
checking references, but go online. Look at their Facebook. Look at what they've got online. Google somebody. I mean, my gosh, nowadays, if you don't Google a candidate, especially a senior-level candidate, because you can't hide stuff. There's everything out there now on the internet. And, you know, I'm just blessed, knock on wood, that you Google me. You still find good stuff and no bad stuff, but – you can't even believe some of the people that, you know, send me a resume and I go online and next thing it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So a couple of stories I had. So I had like 4 years ago, I had a guy give me a resume to be a sous chef, and he put down that he worked for Mario Batali, you know, and, you know, I know Mario. And, you know, so I called him and I said, hey, you tell me about this guy? He's like, I don't know who the hell that guy is. You know, and then when I called the guy out, hey, you know, I called the Batali up, and he didn't know who the hell you were, man. You know,
yeah, you know, there's a lot of embellishment going on resumes. Right. You know, check references. Just make sure you're taking that time because listen, there's a lot of people that can swoon you in an interview, and you're thinking, oh my god, this is the best thing I know. Well, they're professional at doing that, and they've swooned a lot of people, and you know. You know, but as far as attracting good talent, listen, you know, at the end of the day, people don't leave jobs because of money. The number one reason they leave is because they aren't treated well. The number two reason is because they don't know their career path with you. And mm-hmm. it's not until the third reason that they leave because of money. So, you know, obviously attract good people. You've got to have a career path for them and you've got to treat them well.
Exactly right. Oh, Andrew sent another question over. Do you have the same core values at all your restaurants, or do you treat each restaurant as an individual in terms of core values?
Andrew, that's an awesome question. Yes and no. You know, I have multi-units that are all different concepts. So is there, you know, a ribbon of continuity in my core values? Yes. Passion, number one. That's the number one core value in every one of my properties, because if you're not passionate about this business, you know, it could be a grind and you're probably not going to stay in it for a long time.
Exactly.
But no, we do, you know, I do team building exercises with all of my new managers every time we do an opening. And, you know, people support what they help to create. So, you know, I might guide them towards a value or two here, like passion. However, you know, I let the team come up with what their core values are from an operating standard, because if they come up with them, they're going to believe in them and they're going to expound them.
Exactly. Yeah, I do a core values exercise too with clients, and I take them through. And we kind of do like this Mad Lib kind of thing. It gets pretty crazy. And yeah, but, you know, and I try to, I'm like you, I try to stay out of like, you know, guiding them. Because, you know, I know you and I mean, I can use words. I can be very suggestive with how I recommend things and influential. So I try to actually really let them kind of do it. So, yeah, it's tough sometimes.
And, you know, it'll stick a lot better that way. And yeah, it does. So it's a lot of fun too. So I'm sure your Mad Lib thing is probably a hilarious exercise that your people, your team's going to remember years and years to come.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then we come up with, and here's the thing. At the end of it, they all like, you know, when they see it kind of all come together at the end, because at first it's kind of like weird. It's kind of a weird kind of a Mad Lib kind of thing. And then I'm just like, you know, we have sticky notes and stuff like that, and we're doing all these words, and I'm pulling words, and I'm putting them together in different kind of like sentences and stuff like that in different frames. And then I'm writing words in between. And then at the end, it's like, and it's almost like I call it my drop the mic moment. After, you know, I go, okay, just give me a minute. And I turn the board around and I just put the words up and I write a couple words in and I spin it around. And then they have their one sentence mission statement with their core values involved in it. And they're like, wow. And I usually take the Sharpie and go, drop the mic.
That's exactly how it's done. I do think very similar.
That's it. And they love it. They love it. Yeah. So the NRA show is coming up. You are a speaker, aren't you?
I am. I'm speaking this year on May 22nd at 12:45. So come on in and see me.
May 22nd. Yes, I will be there. Well, hey, I'll be able to see you this year because I'll be at the NRA show. I'm doing the Foodable I.O. event on Friday the 19th, and I'm going to hang out for a few days. And, I'm, of course, at the NRA show. I'm usually hanging out at either – I'm a big supporter of Hot Schedules. I'm usually hanging out at Hot Schedules, or I'm usually hanging out at Toast, or I'm usually hanging out at the Foodable TV. They usually have a kind of a little stage set there, and they're usually broadcasting live. And
let's plan on connecting. Maybe
that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. So I want to just, as we wrap it up here, thanks everyone for the questions. Really great questions tonight. A lot of like interaction. That's always makes a fun broadcast when people are interactive and asking questions. And thanks again to Kelly for taking time. I'll have the links added to the post for anyone interested in contacting Kelly and for ways to make sure that their restaurant can really capture the essence of hospitality in their brand. There's one last question here. The best app you use on your phone to be more productive. Do you have an app on your phone to be productive? I do.
Probably my calendar. Definitely my calendar app. You know, it's funny because it's like another app, something else to, you know, make my severe ADD even more so. Oh, another app. Let me play with that. You know, the only app I think that really works for me is my calendar, because I'm pretty busy and I need to know in real time where I need to be, when I need to be, how I can schedule meetings. So, you know, that's the one that I'm in every day, multiple times a day.
Yeah. I would say, to-do lists don't work. If you're trying to get a grip on time management, I'm telling you right now, to-do lists suck. Do not do a to-do list. If it's important, schedule it and put it on your calendar, like Kelly says. And then the thing I do when I am working on something, like maybe I'm doing some writing or working on a program or a course or a workshop, what I'll do is I use an app on my phone. It's called Focus, and it schedules what I call focus blocks. And I will give myself 25, 30 minutes undistracted time. And I schedule it too. I'll schedule on my calendar at 1 p.m. You know, I'll have a focus block and I schedule 30 minutes to just basically focus 100% on what I'm doing. I don't allow anything to distract me. The only thing I'll have going, I'll have usually some music going, and I use an app for that. That's called Focus at Will. And it's a really great, it's all just instrumental, but the music really kind of keeps me in the zone. It's high energy and it keeps me focused when I'm doing writing. And I can find I can really just knock out a lot of work when I'm undistracted for 30 minutes straight, you know, at least 30 minutes. And sometimes I go longer if I'm really in the zone and things are going. I don't have anything else on my calendar. I'll extend it to like 45 minutes, you know, maybe to an hour. But you got to schedule it. Use your calendar. You know, the biggest goal I say, and people who are highly, highly successful, no white space on your calendar. That's the big thing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I always say if it's in my calendar, it's a done deal. If it's not in my calendar, it never happens.
It's like, what? I don't remember that, you know. Yeah. So in closing, I want to say, you know, hospitality is definitely a feeling. It's the connection between, you know, it's really the connection and bond that you create between your guest and your brand. And there's that old saying, and Kelly kind of mentioned it earlier, people don't really care how much you know until they know how much you care. Hospitality is a game changer, and it truly separates the average from the outstanding. And if you can tap into that emotion, you can change your restaurant from being average to outstanding in a heartbeat as soon as you connect. And if you're looking for more tools to take your restaurant to the next level, please go by and check out Restaurant Coach University. I have online courses there to help you build your brand, strengthen your team, and increase your profits. All you need to do is take action and sign up. Thanks again, Kelly. I always appreciate conversations with you, and I always always have something I take away from it too. So
thank you, sir. Great to see you.
Thanks seeing you. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Coach Podcast with Donald Burns. Tune in next time as we serve up more ways to maximize your potential. Visit our website at www.donaldburns.net or download episodes at iTunes and Stitcher Radio.